Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everyone. Thank you for letting us come in your home this evening. My name is Professor Gary Lee, and we are the AMAA Masters Radio Show. This is our second year, and I'm very proud to say it's an award-winning radio program that features Auntie Jessie Bowen, his amazing wife, Mrs. Bowen, who has her own show, and of course, Karen Eden Herman, does her motivational spiritual show. And of course, the Sport Karate Museum. We talk about the history and the pioneers and the people who created things in America, whether it be controversy or setting standards. Tonight we have a great show. Tonight we have an interesting show, and we're talking about something that's been around for a long time. One of probably the most controversial shows I've ever done. And it's interviewing one of the people who are involved with the Black Dragon Fighting Society, Ashada Kim. And I'll be bringing him on in a few minutes, but before we bring him on, there's something that's in my heart and I have to share with you. As you know, this past weekend, our week was very terrible for America. We lost 17 children on Valentine's Day. I went to a friend of mine's. He's in a convalescent home. He's been there for almost 5 years now. And I play chess with him every month. And he doesn't watch television or listen to the radio. And, you know, he's close to 90 years old. When I walked into the home the other day, he got up and he looked at me. And the first thing he said was, "What's happening in America, Gary? What's going on?" And he had seen what had happened. And I had to sit there and explain to him something, but it was hard. And I had this gentleman who served in the Korean War, who did 3 tours of Nam, crying in my arms and didn't understand why 17 more kids are gone. We've got to understand that Las Vegas, Columbine, South Carolina, we can't just let it go away. We got to find out the solution to not happening anymore. And whatever the solution is, we always have to protect our children. So martial artists who are listening tonight, if you're a practicing gun owner, always be safe, always train, always pass on the educational guidelines of handling a firearm. Educate. Thank you for that moment. And God bless everybody, and our condolences and prayers are with everybody in Florida and everybody that was surrounded by that terrible tragedy. Well, our show tonight is pretty cool. It features a gentleman that, well, I'll just read you the introduction, and then it's going to be there because I'm excited about having it. I'm excited about having my friend for many years on the show. Here we go. Black belt, yes. Controversial, yes. Mysterious, definitely. Ashada Kim, one of the senior members of the longtime group known as the Black Dragon Fighting Society. You know, Ashada has been around a long, long time and has had his life open challenges and threats and mayhem. But knowing him on a personal basis, I can tell you he is the calmest martial artist I know. Cool, calm, and collected. Yep, extremely cool. He is also one of the most dangerous, calm in the mind persons I know. Also, his looks are deceiving, you know, with a slender bill and the horn rim glasses. You know, he wears, it's deceiving for Ashada, because Ashada is a ninja. That's right. He studies ninjutsu. You know, as a student in the art of the stealth and illusions and surprise, you know, it's not a sport. It is not played. It is as real as he believes he's extremely dangerous. And he does. And he is. To his degree that he believes. He is dangerous. I'll talk about the dance of death. Oh, wow. Ashada is a student and master of the art of ninjutsu. That's right, the art of stealth. I know his reputation for his world. It is not a sport. It is a martial arts by the way of the warrior. One subject we cannot leave out are the mysterious controversy subjects that's been brought about throughout the years. You know, the Black Dragon Fantasy Society and the history behind all the D-Max stuff, the comic book stuff, the challenge matches, the Dance of Death, the levitation video on the internet, and the Count Dante alias John Keenan history and how he curated the society or was part of coming from another part to create the society. Is it two different sides? We don't know. We'll find out. Enjoy this up-close interview with Ninja Ashada Kim at the AMA Masters and Pioneers Radio Network. Thank you so much. Hey, Ashada, are you here? Are you on the air?
That's right, too. Yep, still here.
Are you? Okay, well, goodness, I can't see you anyway when I'm next to you, but I can't see you now for sure. We're on the radio. How you doing, brother?
Doing very well.
That's a little ninja humor. I want you to get used to that throughout the night, okay? I'm going to throw some ninja stuff at you all night long. So get ready, okay?
Not a problem.
So how's it going? How's it going? How's Florida?
The weather's good. It's been a really nice day. Up in the 80s today, and so, but this is sports on season for us. It's this is natural entertainment seasons as such as we get in Florida. So.
Now you're breaking up just a little bit. Can you you talk a bit, or maybe you're farther away from the microphone? Maybe give it a test.
Okay.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Is that better?
Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing. Okay.
Oh, that's much better.
Great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Usually it's my mistake. My producer, Mr. Bowen, he probably throws something at me sometimes when I make a mistake. So, but thank you so much. Hey, you know, I'm going to get right to the point because I want to talk about a lot of stuff. Without going in depth, how did you get started in the martial arts? And who influenced you first before we get involved with the Black Dragon Fighting Society, all that stuff? How did you get started, and what year, and how did you get started?
Well, when I was about 8 or 10, my father was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia, and I used to go to the matinees at the movie theater for 15 cents every Saturday morning. And one Saturday morning, I heard a bunch of noise, people yelling and screaming and things getting thrown around in one of the wooden barracks that they had all over the place. And I went over to see what was going on, and I saw these guys in there practicing judo. And, of course, these were, you know, professional soldiers, and they didn't have time for, you know, a kid like me. But I got to where I would go over and watch them on Saturday mornings instead of watching the movies. And I picked up a few things about judo there, and every once in a while one of them would show me a little bit about how to fall or, you know, some little basic technique. So that's when I actually started. It was like when I was about 8 or 10. And then when I was in high school, I was on the wrestling team for a while, you know, we were there for about a year, had a team for about a year or so there in my sophomore year. And then when I went to university, I started taking Shotokan up there and trained in that.
So wait a minute. So your base system, okay, so this is important because I want to talk about roots. Your base system was Shotokan Karate Do. Cool. Okay.
That was the first formal style that I actually studied, yes.
Okay.
And so, cool. So then from there, after working on that, then I went up to and learned some of Cal Dante stuff up in Chicago, and that so Shotokan opened the door for me to get into the opportunity to travel and do some of these adventures like we did.
What year was it in Chicago? What year were you in Chicago?
68. That was 1968, because we went up there for the Democratic Convention. See, being in college at the time, I was all very liberal, you know, and thought I was going to change the world or at least help change the world. And so there was a big demonstration going on up there against the Democratic National Convention. And so we all, a bunch of us, decided we would go up there and make sure that nobody hurt the protesters. And it was, of course, kind of
I got to ask you a question. Was that before the Dojo War that was controversial with Jim Condit, or was that after?
This was in 1968, so this was before.
Oh, this was before. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, now, did you learn from the Chicago trip? You say you trained with Con Dante. Now, I know that Dante was named John Keenan, and he came from the USKA under Trias.
Right.
And I know that he broke away and formed the WKA, the World Karate Association, the very first one back in the day, in Chicago.
Right.
And actually hosted the first World Championships in 1963, where Al Jean Carrera won. But I'm saying, what did you learn from Con Dante? What did you actually learn from him?
Well, like I said, we went up there under the auspices of a motorcycle club, and to be security. And so we went up there, and we were kind of billeted with some of these other people, and we were taken down to a dojo where we trained in Katadate, or Count Dante's Dance of Death. And so so that was, like I said, then by being involved in that group, they didn't have a whole lot of time for us, because to them, we were mostly a bunch of bums from Alabama. And they figured we were pretty sick, we were pretty racist, and so they kind of ignored us for the most part.
I got to stop you here, okay, because you bring up subjects I've got to talk about. Now, the Dance of Death, you said that, but man, the Dance of Death, wow, okay, there's two things. One, it looks exactly almost alike what Ed Parker does. Is that similar, or is that different? Did Ed Parker, I mean, it looks different, but yet it's almost the same.
Cal Dante never really explained it this way, but my study of the thing over the years has led me to believe that it originally was a form of Hungar Kung Fu, and that's mainly because of the deep bow stances and things like that that are in it,
and also the emphasis on the hand
techniques primarily. There's no kicks in the Dance of Death. And so there's a couple of stomps, and there's a couple of knees, but there are no kicks in there.
Isn't there spine manipulation?
Yes. And it's when you're doing some of the takedowns, and you're also striking to the spine in a couple of places.
Okay.
And so,
the question is, I shot it. The question is, you can't think of it at first. And then Mr. Parker, I saw him do it in the 70s, you know, on film and everything. I wonder how the similarity is. That's what I'm curious.
Well, like I said, every system has its own Dance of Death. In Bruce Lee's movie, The Game of Death, the guy that he fought in the white silk gi with the gold belt, who was a Horango master, I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, they talked about the fact that each style has its own particular Dance of Death, and the characteristics of the Dance of Death are it has a lot of fist techniques, and it also strikes all the major vital and fatal points. And so this is how you learn Demuck, is by learning where these vital and fatal points are.
That's another subject. You keep mentioning these subjects that I got to ask about, sir. I mean, like I said, I know that you train in a lot of these systems, but to the general public, Dance of Death, Ninjutsu, Demuck, you know, is it Demuck or Demuck, first of all?
I say Demuck myself.
Demuck
is the way I pronounce it.
Now, here's the theory for people who don't understand what that is. The theory is, my question is it a delayed death touch, or is it a touch that will activate something later on in the sense of arteries or blood vessels? I mean, I've heard so many different stories. Someone putting bricks up? I'm just asking a question first, please. Putting the bricks up. And then breaking the top brick and not breaking the bricks and breaking the bottom brick. What's the purpose of that, and what does that do? Tell me.
Okay. Well, the way Demuck is laid out is using the acupuncture meridians basically to affect the flow of energy in the body.
What are meridians?
Well, these are lines of energy that travel along certain pathways on the surface of the skin that connect vital organs to external stimulation points. For instance, there's a point in the web of your hand called large intestine 4. And the energy, if you massage it one way, you can cure constipation. If you massage it the other way, you can cure diarrhea. And there's a whole line of these points that runs up your arm and runs up the side of your neck and runs under your nose.
I can hit somebody hard with a technique that can cause diarrhea?
Well, no. What I'm saying is this is an example of an acupuncture point that you can use for a therapeutic purpose. Okay.
It's very simple.
But the trick is you have to know which way the energy is flowing. In the large intestine meridian, the energy is flowing from the tip of the outside corner of the index fingernail up the arm.
Shada, sir, listen, I got to ask you a question, please. I'm sorry. This is so exciting to me to have you on the air. And I don't mean to interrupt you, but I got to ask you a question. Now, you're sounding like a guy that was really hardcore Karate Do, a USKA champion, and we're talking about Mr. Dillman, who went on to develop the Chi Ball, which is to knock people out, down, without touching them. How close right. is that?
Well, this is an example. Well, this is an example of what you were saying before about breaking the bottom brick. Is that when you can break the bottom brick was a technique that they call the Tibetan burning palm. And Tibetan burning palm was taught to Count Dante by Senzo Tanaka, and then Count Dante told Dr. Day to teach it to Hanshi Frank Dukes, and so that when he went to the tournament, he would be able to demonstrate that he knew this
right.
technique.
Oh, right. Okay. Cool. Okay.
Okay. So the purpose of doing this is to demonstrate that you can transmit energy through the top brick, which represents the skin and the outside muscles, and you can disrupt the energy inside an organ, which is deep inside the body, without leaving a mark on the outside of the body. And this is mostly done by vibration. But essentially that's how the technique works. And now, as a result of this, if you strike extremely hard, you can kill the guy instantly. If you strike with a softer touch, you can kill him in 3 days. If you strike with an even softer touch, you can take as much as a month.
You say that word kill. And, you know, I know kill, destroy is part of the way of the
here's the thing. What happens is, let's say that you want to disrupt the liver. Now, you can strike the liver on liver 14, which is a point that's on the tip of the lowest rib on the right-hand side of the body. And a lot of boxers use this point. They call it a left hook to the liver. And it'll knock a guy out in a minute, even with a boxing glove on. And so, because it's an acupuncture point. But you can strike that point, and you can rupture the liver. Now, there's a cure for most of these strikes. And you have to know what that cure is, as well as knowing how to inflict the strike. That way you learn medicine. At the same time, you learn how to do these deadly points. And so that's why it is that later on, almost all real martial artists become doctors.
Okay, Chata. Okay. Sir. Now, that gets to my next question. Through the years, you've been confronted by some really incredible challenges and threats, and I'll say challenges again. And I want to ask you, as a historian, how have you handled that? Because I've followed you through the years, even before I became friends with you. You went through some pretty tough times, and you know, I'll share with my readers, you know, looks are deceiving with you. You know, I know that you're a true martial artist. I know that you are a warrior, but. Again, looks at the scene. How do you handle that when people look at you and say, "Well, you can't be that. He can't."
Well,
really
just to give you an idea of how intense some of this was. At one time a website that had a headline: "Yes, Ashita, here's a website dedicated solely to your destruction." And there were a lot of people that took shots at me in the early days of the internet because this was the way they developed their troll skills. And I figured out pretty quickly that you couldn't really argue with them.
Yeah.
So essentially,
you and Frank are the most talked about people on that that website called Bushido. I mean, everybody.
Oh, sure,
there.
Yeah. And I've had several friends.
You know, I tell people a shout. I say, you know, if they weren't doing things that are positive to some degree. People wouldn't attack them. I understand that every day.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that most of these people are jealous because they think that I'm rich and famous, and they would like to be rich and famous themselves, but they're not, and so they're miserable, and they want to make everybody else miserable, and so a friend of mine in South Africa told me one time, all criticism is jealousy disguised, and. Looking at it from that point of view, it makes it easy to withstand.
I'll pray for them. I'll put them on my prayer list. But here's the next question. I love this because I got so many questions for you. I got them written down in front of me. The Black Dragon Fighting Society. So much controversy behind that. Now they say it came from Japan. It came from somebody. It came from all this stuff. All these different things. All I know is a history from Chicago. What was it before Chicago? What was it? Give me to Chicago first.
My understanding, Chicago first, basically the American chapter of the Black Dragon Fighting Society was founded by John Keehan, who later became known as Count Dante, who was essentially known at that time as Count Dante. What he was doing was he was using theatrical techniques to promote the martial arts. And this is one of the ways he attracted attention to the martial arts events that he was putting on at the time.
Right, he was on
the no holds barred.
And so,
oh sure. Well, he did the comic book thing because when for a certain amount of money, you can get a several million impressions of your ad that will be distributed to teenagers, especially teenagers who are a little bit nerdy, let's say, in the back in those days. Not necessarily. They were quieter, basically, and they were less aggressive. And so all of a sudden,
right.
Here's a guy telling them, listen, you can stand up to any bully, and you can fight back, and here's how you can do it. And he showed them this thing. Most of these people who bought this book never learned that form. They just read about
right.
it, and they thought about it, and they decided, yes,
book.
I can fight back.
You know, Dr. Day
and
gave
so,
me that
yes.
book. You hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Day gave
oh, yes.
me that book. Yes, he did.
Yes,
he did. Yes, he
and
did.
So it's a great book, and because what it does is it empowers you, okay? And for $5, you can be a member of the Black Dragon Fighting Society, and the image of that is that if something happens to you, your brothers will come and avenge you. And that's why it is you have power in the group. And if all you got to do is be a part of that group, just pay $5, and you get the book. It was a great deal, and it was aimed at a perfect audience.
It
made the guy a fortune.
Yeah.
Well, it made the guy a fortune. And so it enabled him. He did that too. Yeah. That was.
Yeah.
This is yes. And this was part of the.
Is that true? Did he really have a tiger?
Doug, his best friend Doug Dwyer, who still lives in Chicago, told me that he was a roommate of Count Dante at the time, and they did have a lion cub that they kept for a couple of years. And he told me one time that the cub or the lion. It got pretty frisky at one point when it was kind of a yearling. It jumped out of the second floor window of their apartment onto a horse that was tied to a carriage out in front of the building. And they had to go out there and drag this baby lion off of this horse. And so, but there were several pictures of Count Dante with this lion on a leash, basically. And there's pictures of him.
Listen, I've got to say something, and it's really important. I put it down in my notes, and I really want to say this. John Keenan, alias Count Dante, for whatever reason he named himself Count Dante, I really want to applaud the fact that I realized that he was a great fighter. He was a USK pioneer with Artie Simmons and other people. And I know from my research, from meeting Victor Moore and knowing my research, what I've done, that Keenan was very, very, you know, he was against all the prejudice that was involved against the black community, especially in martial arts.
Oh, yes.
And
Victor
would go out there and just beat the crap out of people, and he wouldn't get points for it. And one of the reasons why I know that John formed the WKA and did what he did was to give a lot of black American fighters a place to fight, and people don't realize that. So God bless, you know, the black American fighters and, you know, all the incredible guys that have done what they've done.
Yeah.
And people don't realize people like John Keenan, even before the prejudice, before the 70s and stuff, Count Dante felt in his heart that people were being prejudiced against, and God bless him for that.
Exactly.
And that was the part of
exactly.
He was. Sentiment. I want to show that. Exactly.
Oh
yeah.
Yes, and he was a pioneer in that area. He was one of the first instructors that would take black students, because all the other instructors were prejudiced, basically, and they had an unspoken code, and he decided that code was ridiculous. And he would go in for equality. And this is what we were fighting for in the 60s. This is why we went to the convention and stuff like that. We were fighting for equality for these people. And so, like I said, and this was the noble cause, or one of the noble causes that I took up at one point. But anyway, get back to the Black Dragon Fighting Society.
Yes.
Before that, it was a part of a group that trained Japanese spies in the Nakano Spy Academy during World War II in special stealth techniques and things like this. And before that, it was the Amur River Society in northern China. And according to the legends, the Amur River is full of gold, and that's what finances all of the Black Dragon operations all over the world. Of course, nobody knows where this river of gold is, and if you find it, you never come back. So it's, you know, it's part of the myth. It's part of the mythology
of the group.
Sounds
like folklore.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, then before that, it was the Black Dragon Tong of Retribution, when the Hans and the Mings were fighting and trying to take over who was going to run the country for the next 300 years, sort of a thing. And so that was when it was sort of became a group that was designed to protect the peasants from the occupying overlords. And then, of course, the techniques developed from the idea of doing as little harm as possible. In other words, instead of getting out on the battlefield and killing 1,000 peasants that didn't want to be there in the first place, these guys would just go and sneak in and kill the warlord. And then when the warlord was dead,
I got to ask you a question. Is it true, one of the first stories I heard about ninjutsu was there was some type of war between two clans, and the ninjas got involved, and they went through the gates, and of course, snuck in, dug a hole on top of the roof, dropped a string down in front of the prince's mouth or whatever, dropped dips of oil of poison on the dips of string into the prince's mouth, and of course, assassinated him, and blah, 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 blah. Is that a true story?
Right. Well, this is one of the legendary stories of the ninja, it was actually played out in a movie called You Only Live Twice, where Sean Connery played James Bond,
really?
And they had a guy climb in the rafters.
I heard when I was like 9 years old. Yeah, it
was. Oh yeah, well in the movie, like I said, the guy climbed around the rafters instead of boring a hole in the roof. He climbed around the rafters and got over the guy's face and lowered the thread and then dripped the honey down the thread.
I got to ask you another question. Deals with ninjutsu. Now I know that the difference in clans and Karate Do. It's really about kata, and they have, you know, 8 different families of shunryu or 9, whatever. The thing about it is that the difference is kata. Now, ninjutsu, they do jujitsu, they do judo, they do kata, they do kung fu, they do everything, all stuff. But there's different styles of ninjutsu.
Sure.
What is the difference? What makes the difference of the ninjutsu style, because the difference can't be kata? What makes the difference?
Well, what makes my particular...
New York, what was his difference from what you do? What's the difference?
Who was that you mentioned?
Ronald Duncan from New York, who passed away.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Ago, yeah.
Well, each ninja clan, my understanding of each ninja clan in the Iga and Koga provinces, had a sort of a specialty. And a lot of what Master Ron Duncan was doing involved using weapons. I actually saw him on A Wide World of Sports in the 60s catching flaming arrows, standing in the boxing ring, and the guy shooting flaming arrows at him from corner to corner of the ring, and him catching these arrows out of the air. And I was so amazed because I thought to myself, what if one of those arrows went out in the crowd? I mean, somebody would be dead.
He didn't miss one of them.
He didn't miss one.
Shut up.
Yes.
This year, Rick Wigginton and the Murderers Row from New York, they presented me Ronald Duncan's Obi.
I believe in energetic circulation of energy, and I believe something like that was worn by him has an energy to it, and it carries with it a symbolism and a responsibility. And most people don't, you know, get into it that deeply. But anyway, like I said, what he was doing was essentially things that involved weapons, and what my particular system deals with is invisibility. Because the whole system is based on one technique, and that's throwing sand in the guy's eyes so that he'll blink, and you can run away. Because these guys were nonviolent. This particular system, which I refer to now as a no name, no art, because that way it's not any particular style, and it's not my style either. But there is no name and there is no art to this. It's just one simple trick, and everything else in the system that I practice is based on that one principle, which is the idea of being invisible.
Like sir, stop right there. Okay, I got to ask another question. Now, when you say the word trick, it has, you know, I think immediately, because you know me, I'm an old school karate do guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think of the word trick in karate. But in ninjutsu, I mean, I want you to explain this to my listeners. In ninjutsu, especially in the style that you do, it is all about trickery and illusion and
exactly
magic tricks.
Because it's based on... because it's based on the principle of making things disappear, making things invisible, which is an essential skill in magic. When you change it from one hand to another and it disappears into thin air and things like this, using sleight of hand or scarves. All of our cloak and dagger techniques are based on scarf techniques that you can use to make a ball or an egg vanish in from your hand, just like if you were a stage magician. And so, but the cloak techniques are essentially the same thing, except they're with a big blanket, and you can use them for self-defense. You can use your jacket for self-defense. It's using the same techniques. And so this is the idea of having the exotic weapons.
Ashada.
Sure.
Well, apparently you can use a hula hoop, because that's one of the most controversial videos on the Internet. And people have looked at it, and they've said, yeah, is that an illusion? Of course it is. But it makes it look like you actually picked yourself up. Now, you just explained to me you are the master of illusion and tricks. So that's really what you're doing there, really? That's
well,
what, I mean,
the trick is the thing about the levitation video is that it's a metaphor. Okay, when you meditate, you get to hear things that other people
explain
can't hear.
Explain metaphor to the people who aren't educated. What does metaphor mean?
Metaphor means it's a symbol of something else.
Yes.
It's a symbol that represents or stands in the place of. For instance,
yes,
if you say he runs like a deer, that's a simile. But if you say he is a deer when he runs, that's a metaphor. Okay.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Okay. So anyway, but the metaphor is that when you're meditating, you're going to feel things and see things and hear things that other people can't feel and see and hear.
You levitated, or are you saying that it wasn't a trick?
What I'm saying is that when you meditate, you feel sometimes as if you're floating off the floor. And when that happens, you know you're in a proper meditative state. For instance, most people get panicky when they hear their heartbeat for the first time. When yoga, they call this the sound of one hand clapping. Because when you hear it, it means that you're relaxed enough that you're actually able to start hearing internal sounds. And in Chinese meditation or ninjutsu meditation, there's a whole lot of things like the hiss of the dragon and the roar of the tiger, for instance, is the sound of the blood rushing in your ears. And that's a sign that you're relaxed and your breathing is so slow that you're completely relaxed and you're in a deep meditative state. And this meditative state can be used to stand off cold or things like that. Sure.
Shut up. Was it a trick
or
was it not a trick? Was it a trick?
It is what magicians would call an illusion.
Illusion.
An illusion.
Very good.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Well, God bless you for saying that with me. I appreciate it. You're a good guy. And by the way, but before we go on to my commercial break, I want to share something with my listeners that people understand I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at my Black Dragon Fighting Society membership registration card, presented to Professor Gary Lee, and this is the certified. The above-named practitioner of the Oriental Fighting Arts is the registered with the Black Dragon Fighting Society as a lifetime member. Dr. Lawrence Day, PhD. God bless and rest in peace, Dr. Day. You know, I want to share people. I was sitting on the porch of Mark Jerry when we were doing his roast, and everybody was there. I mean, Cynthia Rothrock, James Liu, a whole crew of people, Dana Samus, and they all went shopping. And I was sitting on the porch looking at the sunset, and I saw this tall guy walk in. He had sunglasses on. And he immediately said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, who are you, man?" You know, my Hawaii attitude came out. And he said, "My name is Frank Dukes." And I said, "Whoa, Frank Dukes from Bloodsport, huh?" And he said, "Yeah." And you know what? He sat down with me, and we started talking. We talked for almost 2 hours. And in that time period, he called Dr. Day, and that moment, at that porch, Ashada, I was put in as a lifetime member for the Black Dragon Fighting Society. And you know what's really cool about this story is that we roasted Mark Jerry that night, and he had everybody in the world there, from Art Camacho, Cynthia Rothrock, you name it. Everybody was there. Afterwards, everybody had left and gone back to the Mark Jerry's house except for me. I was the last one to leave. But you know who didn't leave my side that whole night? Make sure I was on the limousine and taken care of? Frank Dukes. He didn't leave my side that night, and I realized that I had a friend, and I understand what the Fighting Society is. As you said earlier in the interview, it says that your brother will not leave you. They will not leave you under any type of circumstances if once you're part of the brotherhood, and that's why I'm very proud of you guys. And I wanted to share that with my listeners that, you know, I'm very proud of being part of what you guys are. And I know it's a controversial group, but God bless you guys and what you do. And that brings up my commercial time. I'm going to come back with you in about 5 minutes, and we're going to play the Legends Name Game. We're going to talk about some really cool people. So you'll be there on the air for me, okay, sir?
Sounds good.
Super. I'll bring you right back. Hey, we're on the air with Ashada Kim, one of the high Don members of the Black Dragon Fly Society, and we sat and talked with him, and we answered some questions that are controversial for the past 30, 40 years that people have asked about, and we'll be coming back to him in just a few minutes. I'd like to do a shout-out. I do every week now, and this is my friends, and they're very special people. They're part of the Sport Karate Museum and the vision that we're doing. It's the Melton family, and they have long-stuck karate. And what's really cool about it, they're going to have a tournament, and the tournament's going to be in Dallas, Texas, the famous Gillies in Dallas. It's going to be May the 12th, and it's put on by Mr. Steve Melton and Wes Melton and Rick Melton and Stephanie Melton, and they are a Texas karate family. So a big shout-out to them. For more information about the tournament on May the 12th in Dallas, Texas, you can go to longeaglefightingarts@gmail.com, and I'll say it again very slow, Lone, L-O-N-E, Fighting Arts, F-I-G-H-T, Fighting, F-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, Arts, A-R-T-S, @gmail.com. So check out the event that's happening in Dallas, Texas on May the 12th. Now, episode coming up, and the heart of our show from day one, and this is our second year, has been the who's who in the martial arts. That's right, the book that kind of puts everybody across America together and get to tell their stories. And this year, August the 3rd, on my birthday, August the 3rd, my birthday in Washington, D.C., a Legends Banquet and the Who's Who in Martial Arts celebration will bring in some incredible people to celebrate the book. Mr. Dan Severn, UFC champion, will be doing seminars. The one and only Cynthia Rothrock, that's right, she'll be there putting on seminars. Mr. Dana Abbott will be there teaching his sword. World champion. People have said the best black belt traditional kata performer ever, Mr. John Chung. And, of course, one of the greatest women fighters ever, Ms. Linda Denley. Now, also there will be the mindfulness certification put on by Hachi Jesse Bowen. So this will be a great weekend for everybody, August 3rd weekend in Washington, D.C. And remember, for more information, if you want to learn about the book or you want to understand what the book is, you can go to whosoonandthemartialarts.com. And also check it out on Amazon. You can check it in Barnes & Noble. And, of course, our dear friends at Century Fitness, which is, of course, the Who's Who in the Martial Arts. So check out the places that you can get your book. And remember that we'll be at the Super Show this year, okay, July 1st through the 3rd in Las Vegas with our live radio show with special guests Jim Buten and Jesse Bowen, Jim Butcher, and myself. And I'll be interviewing all the stars of the Super Show. So, hey, don't forget, please, please check out Who's Who in the Martial Arts. Now, I'd like to come back with my guest tonight and do a segment that we've kind of invented 2 years ago called the Legends Name Game. And we're going to be talking about a few people that I'm going to throw at Ashada Kim. And first of all, Ashada, are you there, sir?
Oh, yes. Still here.
Is it Ashada or Ashida? Which one is it, Ashada or Ashida?
I usually say Ashida because it's that way it's Ashi and Da, which is means Bigfoot. And basically, it's a name that I picked up one time because I, in a tournament, I kicked a guy and I chipped his tooth. And so after that, he called me Bigfoot.
Why did you change your name? Why did you change your name?
Well, this is what would be known as a club name. Okay, if you consider this to be like a motorcycle club or a fraternity, this would be a name that you are known by to the brothers. And there's that old saying that all ninja have three names, one that they are known by, one that they are called, and one that they keep secret. And so that way you have the multiple aliases that way or multiple identities that way.
So if I ask you your real name, you won't tell me. Is that what you're going to say to me?
Probably not, no. Probably not.
My listeners in my email this morning that I got, when I got up, I had over 30 emails just about your show. So I've got to ask them, what is your real name?
Well, that's something that I usually don't divulge. The people that are enemies of mine,
I
know it.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the people that are enemies of mine, they pretty well know who I am. And so because they've gone to the trouble to look me up. But I said, it's, oh, yeah, well, it's the same with the thing about age. I usually don't tell people how old I am either, because certain Chinese magicians can use your birthday against you if they know how.
Okay.
And so so they, like I said, there's certain superstitions that that all these ninjas have.
See, that's the mysterious part of this interview tonight, and I appreciate it so much to throw that mysterious stuff in there. But so here we go. Let's play the Legends name game. You got, okay, I'm serious, you got not more than 2 minutes on each name, okay? So and say what your heart tells you. So here we go. The very first person I'm going to throw at you is a gentleman named Burrell Walkinshaw.
Okay. This was since Walkinshaw had a kung fu school in Orlando when I moved down there. And I originally went to him with the idea of selling him nunchuckers that I was producing in the garage. And he asked me if I knew anybody that could teach nunchuckers. And I said, well, I could. And so he let me have a class there. And then I also taught ninjutsu there. And I studied Aikido and Tai Chi and Shotokan with him. And and so I trained with him most every night of the week when I moved to Orlando.
So he helped influence your journey. He helped influence your journey.
Oh, yes. Exactly. Yeah. He was
a licensed
in Shotokan.
Did he have
No, not at all.
No, okay.
No,
let's
not
go
at all.
To the next guy. How about David Harris.
David Harris is a healer, basically, and a therapist that does a lot of Qigong work.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot of Chinese medicine from him. We have a lot of his videos available, for that matter, on healing and techniques of how to use qi to restore the flow of energy to the body so that it's beneficial and helpful, and that everybody can be healthy and live a long time, because that's what it's all about, is longevity and enjoying your life.
Yes.
And if you're miserable, if you're not feeling good, you're not enjoying your life. And so we want everybody to be well. And like I said, that's why I'm into this, because my ninjutsu was invented by doctors, and the idea was to not hurt anybody, you know, just not let anybody hurt you. And so the same thing, if you can heal them, so much the better. And then the people will be happy to see you coming. So.
Well, David Harris is an amazing guy. I met him in Mississippi a few years back. I really liked him. Okay, let's go to the next guy, Tim Broussard. Tell me about Tim.
Tim Broussard, he was a student that I met when I was living in Orlando, when I was working at a summer camp. And we met, and he was there, and I put on a martial arts demonstration there. And it went as part of the show, as part of the program. And he was in one of my cabin there at the time. And 20 or 30 years later, we lost contact after that, because we weren't really that close. We were just, you know, a camper and a counselor. But 20 years later, he got in touch with me on the email and was interested in ninjutsu. We started talking, and he invited me to come out and visit him in Baton Rouge, and I went out to see him. And we got to talking about Florida. And I told him that I had been a counselor at a summer camp, and he mentioned that he had once been to a summer camp. And we realized that we had met each other there. And we figured that there was a reason why it was that we've been brought back together like this. And I learned a lot of great techniques from him. He's a very very philosophical person, and I've learned a lot of really great wisdom from speaking with him and knowing him and training
him.
Well,
the next person, apparently it sounds like you'd learned from him because of the name is really cool, and you want to talk about a gentleman named Guru.
This is, once again, one of the secret names, basically, or one of the club names that I learned ninjutsu from. And in keeping with the vow of silence and also the part about ninjutsu, about pretending like it doesn't exist, This particular teacher of mine.
So you just
want
to say
that he's
someone special. He's someone special. Okay, I understand.
Right. He was basically that taught me ninjutsu skills by taking me hunting, basically. And we hunted quite a bit and went out in the woods
with
quite a bit. Learned how
gun?
To chart by the. Oh no, with the gun for the most part. With the gun, but a lot of times we will go out and try to sneak up on the game and touch it, like it's trying to sneak up on a deer. Okay, is a really fascinating experience, and it teaches you a lot about invisibility and a lot about stealth, and it can be done, okay, but it's not easy.
You know what?
And so when you can sneak up, when you can sneak up on a deer, you can sneak up on anybody. So,
Ashada, I got to, you know, it's on the spur of the moment. It's I got to share this with you. I hope you don't mind. It won't take but a couple
sure.
moments.
Oh,
back
no.
in the day, when they invented paintball, you remember paintball? You know mm-hmm. what paintball is, right?
Oh, yeah.
They invented
oh, yeah.
it. I was there when they invented it, when they, you know, do 3 or 4 acres in the woods, and they were creating this new mm-hmm. game, and they had this new gun that could shoot the paintballs. Well, I was playing poker mm-hmm. with a bunch of guys that were into that, and they were just, you know, just starting it. And one guy made a remark that I was a karate guy. And then another guy made another remark, and someone bet $100 that I could get these guys before they shoot them. Of course, I was crazy back then. And I said, yeah, if you're going to give me some of the money. And so mm-hmm. the guy said, I'll give you half of it. So I'm thinking, I'm doing this for $50. This is cool. Mm-hmm. Except the only thing, they didn't do it down on the acreage where I didn't know. They, for some reason, we went down to New Braunfels, and I knew New Braunfels and the cliffs and the mountains really well. And mm-hmm. I got literally 4 of the 5 guys by doing stealth stuff. I mean, hiding in mm-hmm. the leaves and in a tree. And mm-hmm. I did it because I was doing it for money. And I got
right.
and I had paintballs in my hand. So I had to hit them with the paintball mm-hmm. before they could shoot mm-hmm. me. And I got, like I said,
cool.
4 of the 5 guys. And but I understand. That
that's great. That's
ago.
Great.
That was
yeah.
like,
but that's
that
good, but
was
that's...
1978 or something. That was a long time ago. So,
but that's how,
so
you, that's how you learn... Yeah, that's how you learn these
yeah.
stealth skills. And like I said, the idea of having
yeah.
you throw the paintballs like shuriken, that was a great touch because that was a great way
cool.
to give them the advantage of range and distance and everything.
Let's go to the
and
next
it required
guy,
a certain
Let's
amount
go to
of
the
skill.
Next guy. Let's go to the
yeah.
next guy.
Okay.
Is he real, Sensei Tanaka? Is that real or is that fictitious guy? Is he real?
No, it's from my understanding from talking with Dr. Day was that Tanaka was one of the ones who trained Count Dante in doing the Denmark techniques and the techniques that he was teaching
real.
As the,
he was
the eventually
he was
as the dance step. Right.
Okay.
Well, now
so
my understanding is if you
real. Okay.
Oh no, if you yeah. if you watch the movie Fearless with Jet Li, in the end of the movie he fights a guy named Tanaka who was a real representative of the Japanese government at the time. And went around and did these challenges all over the world, and was famous for knocking people out. I mean, he was a real master of the martial arts, and this is part of the legend, basically, of this particular individual.
Yeah.
And so he was on the same level as Hu Jin-hwa was there, the character that was being played by Jet Li, in terms
cool.
of understanding, having a deep and powerful understanding of the martial arts. And being able to channel his energy.
Can we look him up
way.
in the archive somewhere? I mean, is he in the history book somewhere?
This is,
can we look up a Sensei Tanaka?
I'm not sure where you could find a lot of information about him. I mean, it's difficult because he was a Japanese spy that was sent to America to cause racial unrest and help break up the country. Because right, this is all bearing in mind the 50s and the 60s. This is right after World War II. And there was still a lot of animosity and
sure.
a lot of hatred, you know, between the people that had fought World War II, and especially in the Korean or Japanese theater. And so he was essentially sent by the Japanese government on this mission, and how Count Dante got hooked up with him, and then Count Dante basically turned it into his version of the civil rights movement. There's a great story about how Dr. Day was sent down with a bunch of guys to a whites-only hotel where they were having a karate tournament and basically told the guy who was putting the tournament on that he was there with 20 guys, and if they didn't let Vic Moore go in and compete, that there was going to be a fight right there in the street. And they basically let him in, and Vic Moore won, and he became the first black heavyweight champion in the karate tournament circuit at that time. And so, and this is the kind of thing that Count Dante did to promote equality, because he
right.
understood,
good,
like
good
I
point.
Did, even though I was living in Alabama.
You mentioned
at the time,
someone
being raised
in the conversation about. You mentioned someone in your conversation, and I've got, he's my next guy. I want to talk about
yeah.
Dr. Lawrence Day, who's rest in peace.
Right.
He's gone, but you know, Dr. Day was really instrumental in my early invention of the Living Legends in 1999. I spent
mm-hmm.
hours on the phone with Dr. Day, and he gave
oh,
me
yeah.
all
yeah.
kinds of cool stuff. And you know what he, you know, I'm sure he talked to you about me and bringing me in and stuff. It was just, I really enjoyed him. Tell me about Dr. Day.
Dr. Day,
I figure must have been one of the guys that was with Count Dante when we took the Dance of Death seminar in Chicago, because that was the only time that I was around Count Dante or any of those people. But he must have been one of the people that came with Count Dante as an assistant instructor for this particular thing, because at some point he saw me and he remembered me. And back in the 80s and 90s, when I was first publishing my books, he got in touch with me about reviving or getting back into the Black Dragon Fighting Society, because I had mentioned something about being in the Black Dragon Fighting Society and the adventure in Chicago and this kind of thing in one of my books. And at that time, there were some legal problems going on, and I told him that I wasn't really interested in doing anything with that right now. So he waited about 2 years, and then he called me back. And we got in touch, and we went up to see him at Fort Walton Beach. And he somehow or the other remembered me from whatever encounter we had had in Chicago. I mean, I don't remember talking to those people because, like I said, they didn't have a very high regard for us because we were from out of town, and as far as they were concerned, we were rednecks. And so we basically didn't have a lot of interaction. But somehow or the other, he remembered me. And we got
how long were you with Dr. Day? How long were you with him?
About 5 or 6 years, I gather, I would say. And he had a school in Fort Walton Beach and had several classes going in Fort Walton Beach.
I've got two more guys for you, Ashada. I've got two more people for you. And to me, they're the yin and yang. So I'm going to do the first one first. I truly love this man. He, I'm part of his Black Lotus, the Federation course. I'm very close to him, and I'm talking about Dr. Donald Misko, one of the great mentors of what I do.
Right.
Tell me about your relationship with Dr. Misko.
Dr. Misko, I met when Dr. Day put on the first gathering of the reunited Black Dragons that he knew, and invited people to Lexington, Kentucky in 2012, which was the year of the Black Dragon. And we had a great seminar there. There were a couple hundred people there. And that's when I first met Dr. Misko. And then when Dr. Day passed away a few years after that, Dr. Misko was in a position to take over the head of the family position and was gracious enough to do it. And he relinquished control of several other organizations in order to become the head of the family for the Black Dragons. And he's done a really remarkable job as a leader and as a mentor. I mean, he's established several programs that we have as far as some of our charitable outreach stuff goes and things like this. And he is always, there
he's
for you to talk
forever.
To.
He's been around forever.
Oh, yeah, and he's been some places and done
smart.
Some things. So, yeah.
Yes.
So it's
I saved probably the most controversial guy for last. And the question that I've got to ask, of course, I got to ask it. Is Frank Dix real?
I believe that he is, because I've seen him do some amazing things, and I believe that he could do all of the things that were in that movie and a few more on top of that.
Okay,
and,
stop, sir. Fastest knockout, fastest kick, breaking bulletproof glass, knockout, 62 knockouts, I believe, in one tournament. Isn't that physically impossible?
No, not really. I saw some video of him.
63 knockouts in one tournament?
Well, you have to bear in mind, some of these tournaments go on for 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, Jimmy McMurtry, one of the promoters that we have up in Kentucky, he's gone to some of these tournaments.
Sir, I don't mean to call you honey, but sir, listen. You're defending something that's physically impossible. 62 knockouts in one tournament.
No, it's not impossible because, like I said, there are other tournaments besides the ones that he went to, basically, that go on for sometimes for 2 or 3 weeks. And so, and you may have to fight 100 guys. And so in a 2 or 3 week period, because this is a lot of these tournaments were done back in the olden days as a way of recruiting soldiers. As a way of recruiting people who could go in and be spies and things like this.
Okay,
because
I understand
you
that,
had to be.
Ashada, I understand that, sir. I understand. We're talking about Frank, though. I mean, the credibility of what Frank has done through the years. I know that he's a real martial artist because I've talked to Dixon Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of people.
Sure.
I've done my research. I know he was a great fighter, man. I know he was. But some of the controversy around his life is just controversy. You got to got to ask the question.
Well, let me address one of the like you're talking about, the fastest knockout. Okay, there's film of him standing up on a what looks to be appears to be a basketball court with bleachers in the background, standing up in face to face with another competitor at a tournament, and when the judge says Hajime, you can see that Hanshi Duke spins around and gives this guy a spinning back kick, okay, slaps him upside the head and knocks him down.
Where's that at?
This is, takes less.
Where's that at?
Takes in last half a second. Well, I don't have a copy of it, but I have seen it basically.
Okay.
And the guy hits the ground, okay, and he tries to get up and he falls back to his knee and he tries to get it one more time and then he stays down, okay. And that's like the fastest knockout that I ever saw. It was, you know, a super right on target punch or right on target strike with the heel of his foot. And it was a perfect move.
But
I saw the same thing in a UFC match one time.
That's a lot of people in one tournament. Anyway,
That's
a lot of people. Now, the other thing about fighting this controversy, breaking the bulletproof glass. Can you explain that?
Okay. I've seen him do that. And as far as I know, that's all that's required is sufficient energy and sufficient chi to do it. And I mean, and I know he can generate that energy, and so who
claims the great bulletproof glass, little brother?
Say again.
That's incredible. No one's ever done that before.
Oh no, but it can be done, because
okay.
Let me explain it this way. Let us assume that it's a metaphor, okay? And what he's doing
is
he's showing you.
There's that word again. Okay, go ahead.
Now, I'm not. But what I'm saying is that if it's a metaphor, what he's showing you is that there are no barriers. There are no obstacles that cannot be overcome. And this is the great lesson of martial arts. One of the lessons like that you see in martial arts and in other arenas is the idea of don't give up. Keep fighting. Okay? As long as you keep fighting, you got a chance.
The question that would be asked is that of all the people in the martial arts from the beginning of time, since they invented bulletproof glass, only one person has claimed to break bulletproof glass, and that's been Frank Dukes. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you talking about that.
Yeah.
Now, going one more thing. Frank has been a big part of another group that, and it's the IDFF. What, explain it to, what that group is? The IDFF.
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that particular anagram. What does it stand for?
It's a group that he runs. I forgot the name of it. IFFB or
IFFA.
IFFAA.
Okay. It's the International Fighting Arts Association.
Is that affiliated with the Black Dragon Fight Society, or is it separate?
Say again.
Is it separate or is it affiliated with Black Dragon Fight Society?
Well, we're affiliated at this point in time. You remember in the movie?
Okay.
The guy who talks to the characters, mentions the fact that the International Fighting Arts Association and the Black Dragon Fighting Society are hosting this year's tournament. And so the International Fighting Arts Association is a group similar
Your speaker's breaking up again. Sorry.
Okay, well, the International Fighting Arts Association is an organization similar to the Black Dragon Fighting Society in that it puts on tournaments in order to find the best fighters for particular purposes. And so, and whether to be soldiers or whether to be agents. Before there were SEALs,
I got to ask you one more question. It's very important. And this is a question that was asked by my readers today in the email. Again, and I don't mean to dwell on this, but it's important for some of my listeners. If Mr. Dukes was this incredible fighter, which he was a good fighter, and he was fighting the best in the world, in the country at the time, why wasn't people like Mr. Lewis and Mr. Norris and Mr. Harris invited to this kumite?
Well, I'm not sure because I wasn't there at the time of why they were not invited.
They were the best in the world at the time in karate. I wonder why they weren't invited.
You have to bear in mind that my understanding of the way these things are set up is that each group in each country basically sends one representative.
You're breaking up
again,
sir. Say
again? I'm sorry. Okay.
You're breaking up again.
My understanding is that the different
chapters of the Black Dragon Fighting Society in all these different countries. They select the fighters that are going to attend these kumite events. And as the Count Dante was supposed to go in 1975, but because he died in 1975, there was nobody to represent America, and that's how Hanshi Dukes got elected to go.
You had Joe Louis and Jim Harrison and Chuck Norris and Richard Marlborough and all these great colored fighters.
Yes.
They were qualified to fight. Why weren't they invited?
Because they weren't invited, because they weren't members of the Black Dragon Fighting Society.
Okay. So you only had to be a member of the Black Dragon Fighting Society to go, and that's the only reason that he was invited from America. Okay, that explains it.
That's my understanding of that, yeah. So it may be,
Mr. Norris, Mr. Harrison, okay, and Mr. Louis, before he passed, asked me the same question. If they were picking the best of America, why weren't they invited? And that answered the question. If they were members of the White Dragon Fight Society, they were invited. So that answered the question, because they were literally the best in the country at the time. They were the best. So great, great answer.
Exactly.
I appreciate that. Now I gotta hit you real hard with this, because I only got a few more minutes. You know, you've done some really great things for the Sport Card Museum, little brother. You donated a personalized shuriken that you personalized to me personally. You gave me your caddy boots. Mm-hmm. I've got Dr. Day's Kung Fu top, and I've got Frank Vince's blue uniform and, you know, amazing stuff that I've got from the Black Dragon Fighting Society. I put some documents and stuff that's priceless, like the Deadly Fighting Art book and stuff. How do you feel that, even though you guys don't do sport karate per se, but you do, but you now did it like I did, but how do you feel that you're part of what I do? And how is it help? I mean, just tell me how you feel about that. Okay, buddy? Thank you.
Okay, sure. Well, the way that I personally feel about it is that all these martial arts have many facets to them. And you can be a bodyguard, you can be a sport karate guy, you can be a UFC fighter. The main thing is that you have a system. Even if eventually all these systems, whichever ones we study, eventually come down to an individual's personal system. And as long as you have a system that you refer to or that you rely on as your fighting techniques, then you're doing martial arts. If boxing is a martial art, wrestling is a martial art. There's lots of Aikido is a martial art, but it's a sport, essentially, Aikido is. And Tai Chi is a martial art.
Why is it important you're part of the museum? That's what I'm asking you. So why is it important you're part of what I do?
Oh, mostly because of the history of the Black Dragon Fighting Society, is our main contribution, because it was a part of history. There were some bad things about the Black Dragon Fighting Society with Count Dante and the Dojo Wars and things like this, and we've moved
and
on from all of that.
I appreciate your answers tonight. You don't know how much I appreciate you taking time and answering the questions and the hard questions that a lot of people want to know. It means a lot. You're very, very, very admirable. I appreciate that so much.
Oh, well, thank you.
It means a lot.
Thank you. Glad to help. Just glad to help. So
what's new for Ashada? And before we do that, I want to talk about Dojo Press. I love that site. There is such a mass way of knowledge. Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, back in the days when I was breaking away from my publishers, some friends of mine set up Dojo Press for me as a way of selling my books. And then over the years, we started doing books for other people, and I did other books that we eventually were added to the catalog. And now we have about 150 books on the catalog and about 75 DVDs on the catalog. Not all from me, but some of them are from other masters like David Harris and some of these other people. And it kind of evolved into a hobby site, because it's not it doesn't have the great distribution that Amazon has, and it's not connected with a lot of the other outlets like stores and shops and things like that. It's strictly an online process, and I like to do it as a way of staying busy. And as a way of helping other people, because everybody's got a book in them. And everybody, even if your book is never published.
Let me share this with you, Ashada. I want to say publicly thank you, because in the very beginning days, and I've sold over 5,000 copies now for Century and worldwide distribution that I've had, but you helped me. You were one of the first guys to put my book out, and I appreciate that so much. I really do.
Well, it's an honor to be of help, and it's an honor
it's an honor to share this with other people and to help other people with it as much as we can, because I think that's really what our purpose is here on the planet, and it is to,
yes,
is to, you know, be kind and help each other. And so any way that I can
and
do
be
that,
dangerous.
I'm always...
And be dangerous. Don't forget about being dangerous, sir. You got to be,
oh, yeah,
gotta
well,
be dangerous, too. I got to do a shout-out to some fellow Black Dragon member people, because I promise I want to do a shout-out to Larry McFadden, Daryl Lassiter, Golly Bum, Karen Slatcher, my dear friend Karen, Mr. Jim Harrison, Black Dragon Fighting Society member, Mikey Rowe Moore, okay? Shout-out to those people, because they're very important in my life, and I was responsible for bringing them in. And I appreciate you explaining everything you did tonight, because I know I hit you with some hard questions, and you're very special to me as a friend, and I hope we cleared up some speculations and some theories that people have thought about, not only about Dragon Fight Society, but your history, too. Now, I'm going to close with something that's been controversial, but I love controversy, the $10,000 challenge. How did that come about, and what is that?
Well, back in the early days when I was first online in the 90s, I had a lot of people that kept challenging me to have, you know, fights or have a throwdown and see who was bad. And so myself and some other instructors that I know in later on actually went to some of these mats, some of these meetings, and there was never anybody there. I mean, I went to several parking lots and a couple of back alleys and some places where these people were supposed to show up maybe with their buddies. You know, we were going to have it out. And the other guys never showed up. And then usually what they would do is they would get a big laugh on the Internet about how they could trick me into wasting my time and money, you know, going to this place
or
going to that place.
Your voice is breaking up again.
So they would get a big laugh out of how they had tricked me into going to these places and wasting my time and money. So that's when I decided that if it was going to be done, it would have to be done in public. It would have to be done where it was recorded and where people could see it.
Did you ever make the $10,000? Did you ever pay it out?
Nope, nobody's ever come up with the money. I've had several people that write to me and send me emails and tell me that, okay, I've got the $10,000. Here's the way it works. You put the $10,000 in my account, and we'll talk about where we're going to have the match and who's going to referee it, and it's going to be in public, and it's going to be videotaped. And I know several promoters in Kentucky and down here in Florida, too. They can put this match on, and we can all make a bunch of money on it. Okay, and everybody can see what a badass these guys are and how tough they are.
When they
beat up an old man, okay, who's listed 6 feet tall, okay, and if they can beat me up, okay, then they're going to be a real tough guy. Everybody's going to really be proud of how smart they are and how bad they are, okay. But if I beat them up, they're going to be embarrassed, okay. And that's why it's $10,000 up front, because I don't want to waste my time embarrassing people, you know. And without getting paid for it. So, because I give you one quick story.
What do you say to people? And I'm going to ask, this is the I want to ask you one last hard question. What do you say to people that not just threaten you, but say you're a phony, say you're a fraud?
Well, once again, that's just basically jealousy.
Tell me what you do. How do you handle those people? Besides,
well, I just,
what you already said.
I just ignore them basically because it's just jealousy. And most of these people have no idea, you know, who I am or what my situation is financially or what my situation is physically, or they're just jealous because they think that I'm rich and famous. And,
well,
you know, frankly,
well, you know
I'm
what?
Not.
In your heart, you are rich and famous. And for you sharing time tonight with me, Shada Kim, whatever your real name is secretly, I appreciate you so much. You know, and I know I made you laugh. Through the years, and it took a while for you to understand me, but you know I appreciate your friendship, and I appreciate the time that you shared with me tonight about explaining about the history. It means so much to my program, and I hope to do another program in the Black Dragon on you guys again maybe next year. I hope I'm in my third year, so I'll bring you guys back. Will you come back and talk to me a little bit?
Oh sure, love to. Because
I love
martial
arts. Guys on. You know,
yeah, that'd be nice.
You guys on. That'd be fun. By the way, I got to tell you, I got real upset. I mean, I had the 25th anniversary this year, you know, for the Living Legend. And, you know, every year I always invite one or two ninjas. I do. But this year I stuck my neck out and I invited 50 of them. And a lot of people got mad at me and they really were upset because throughout the night, nobody could see them. I had a table over there. I mean, but they were invisible, you know. I had to explain that to them. So I'm going to invite them back this year. So they'll be there this year again. And, you know, one of these years you have to come to Living Legends and do your dance of death for me, okay?
Absolutely. Certainly will.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much for tonight, and I appreciate it. And God bless you, Ashada. And by the way, for people who weren't listening tonight, you can listen to the podcast tomorrow on the AMMA Radio's Masters Network, and it'll be up on the social media here probably in an hour or so. So with that said, I want to say thank you again for letting us come in your home on a Tuesday night and letting us share with you sport karate history, history in the martial arts, and time sharing what we've done to accumulate martial arts in America. And the neat thing about it is we're all Asian influenced. Yes, we are. But sport karate was born in America. Good night, America. Aloha. Thank you.